Well, it's great to be here this morning together to worship God and to be on the new time schedule. Hopefully everybody got an extra hour of sleep last night. But we're happy to be here today and thank you all for coming. And we are especially happy to have Catherine with us today. We haven't seen her in some time and really nice to have you. And also Mildred French is here. She has started worshiping with us here recently, and encourage everyone to get acquainted and meet Mildred if you haven't done so. But I'd like to read this morning in Romans chapter 1, beginning with verse 18. Romans chapter 1 and verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things which are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because although they knew Him, although they knew God, they did not glorify Him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man and birds, and four-footed animals and creeping things. Therefore God also gave them up to uncleanness in the lust of their hearts, to dishonor their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie, and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. There comes a time in the life of every nation, I believe the Bible indicates, that God has had enough with that society, with that nation. He comes to a point that He has seen enough of the direction that their lives are living and the beliefs that they are basing their civilization upon, that He makes the determination to release them to their own devices, to choose the course of their own decision and suffer the consequences thereof. According to the principle that the Bible clearly indicates, that whatever a man sows, that will he reap. And from the beginning of time, God has placed in existence three institutions for the preservation of righteous order in the world. And those three were the home, the family, and the church, and the civil government. And God from the beginning established these, especially the home and the government, and then later the church, as being present in society for the uplifting, for the spiritual betterment, for the moral foundations of every society. And God is a very merciful God. And He is a righteous God. And when we look in the book of Romans, the letter to the Romans, the theme of the letter really is the righteousness of God, and how that God has provided a way for our salvation through Jesus Christ, in spite of our sin. He has provided through Christ and through the good news of the gospel the way of salvation. In Romans 1 and verse 16, Paul prefaced this section that we're looking at when he says, "For I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God to salvation for everyone who believes, for the Jew first and also the Greek. For in it, the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith. As it is written, the just shall live by faith. And the book of Romans goes on to lay out in a very orderly way the plan of God's salvation of man that he has placed in place. And he goes on to talk about the civil order of the government in chapter 13. And the church and the relationship that we have. And in other letters he talks about, of course, the family, the importance of it. Now there comes a point, is what I'm saying, that based upon this passage this morning, there comes a point where God has had enough. And it says three times here in this section, he gave them up. He gave them up to their own lusts. He gave them up to their own choices, their own depraved mind. And then things followed their own course. So as we think about what is happening in our lifetime and in our world today, I believe that this message of Paul, this message from God, that we see the dealings of God with man are so critical and so important for us to remember and think about. And he begins by saying, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. And it comes as a surprise for us to think of the wrath of God, because we don't hear much about the wrath of God. We think of the love of God, we think of the mercy of God, the grace of God, and rightly so, but here he points out the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men. And the reason for this is because God is holy and God is just. And even though God is very long-suffering and patient with man and gives many opportunities of coming to the truth, he begins to deal with the righteousness of God, that there is a limit to God's withholding or God's giving of these blessings to bring about, to restrain the flow of evil from taking its course. But there comes a point that he gives them up, that it says here. It says that they suppress the truth. Suppress the truth. And the indication of that is that the truth is here. The truth has been made known to man from the beginning. That man has had sufficient opportunity from the creation to know of the presence of God, and to acknowledge and glorify God as the Creator. But there are those that have chosen to suppress the truth, to keep it from being known, to hide it, and to try to put it out, in other words, to keep it from being made available to others. And that is a serious thing if men are guilty of that. To deliberately try to suppress the truth of God in an order of society. When you think about our nation, America, we have enjoyed freedom. We have been blessed with liberty and with tremendous blessings in our nation for the past 240 years. Our nation has become a great nation. And as we think about the words of the song, God shed his grace upon thee, are really true. That God has bestowed his blessings upon this land in many ways. That is evident for us to see. But we have to honestly consider, is there a point where God would look upon our nation and do as he says here in the book of Romans, that he would give them up? That things have reached a point in our society where God a just God and a righteous God, and he allows us to go down that path, and then the consequences of that. So he is not providing that restraining. He's just saying, okay, I've had enough. That's it. And what happens will happen from that point. Whenever the pilgrims landed here in America, we know that one of the first things they did was to pray to God and acknowledge God. And that they sought to provide a fabric of government and order of society that would be reflecting of giving man the right to worship God and to pursue their own beliefs as that would be. That there would be not a controlling oversight of government forcing people, this is the official church that you must belong or else. That here we would have a land of freedom and liberty to be able to worship God. And the first colleges and universities that were built, such as Harvard University and Princeton and Yale and schools like that, were established in the 1600s, not long after the pilgrims came, for the express purpose to train men to preach the gospel. And so America has been blessed by God because America started out to try to honor God. I believe that God gave His blessings. But as He says here in Romans chapter 1 and verse 20, He said, "For since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse." Now, what this is saying is that the knowledge of God is there in the world, in the creation, that man is without excuse to not see this, to not acknowledge God and His hand here that is evident in the creation of the world. It's not like we could say, well, I never got this message. I didn't know that there was a God. I didn't. No one told me about God. No, it's there for everyone to see, and has been there for everyone to see. Now, that knowledge that we see from the creation is not in itself sufficient for salvation. What that is that by observing nature, we are able to see evidence of God's power and His existence, that God is there, that had to be to create this universe. But that is not the basis of salvation, because the basis of our salvation comes through Christ, who came into this world and gave His life on the cross as a sacrifice for our sins. And our salvation comes through Christ and Christ alone. As the gospel saying that I'm not ashamed of the gospel, it is the power of God into salvation. But the point that he is making is that the evidence of God points us in that direction, that when people come to a point that they are no longer even making any effort of acknowledging God, that something is wrong. They are ignoring the evidence that is there in front of their very eyes, to see that God had to be the creator of this world. I mean, when we look at this world and we see that the earth is in perfect orbit around the sun. When we look at the mountains, how beautifully they are laid out. When we look at the fish that flow through the ocean and through the rivers and the streams. And when we look at a butterfly that is breaking out of its web or its chrysalis and becoming a beautiful butterfly, we cannot look at these things and say, this is all just by accident. There is no designer. There's no evidence of any designer. This all just came about through chance process of natural means. No, that they are without excuse, is what he is saying, to draw that type of a conclusion from what happens. And so what God has done is to then allow, if people come to that point, He allows them to then pursue what their own desires would be. And one of those is for man to search out for wisdom in their own quest for wisdom. But it's false wisdom, because it is a rejection of God who has established this world, who has established this order for us. So he says here in Romans chapter 1, beginning with verse 21, that because they knew God, they did not glorify Him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts. And their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools. Notice that, professing to be wise. So oftentimes when people reject God, they try to live under the false thinking of that we are pursuing a higher wisdom than God. In other words, God is down here somewhere. We are pursuing wisdom that is way up higher than this. Well, this is a false wisdom for men to pursue that. And whenever they do that, he says they have not glorified God. They knew God, but they did not glorify Him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. There's a consequence of that. In other words, when men reject God, and when they think, well, we are pursuing some better wisdom than God. We don't need God anymore in this society. We've moved on beyond that. The consequences of that is their hearts become darkened, and their lives become darkened. So it is a downward decline, not an upward movement. It's a downward movement. When people go away from God or think that they have discovered something wiser than God, what they have discovered is their own atheism, their denial of God, their own man's attempt to put something in its place. And it's never going to be what they are thinking they are going to accomplish. It's going to be the opposite of that. So he goes on in verse 23 and he says, and they changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man and birds and four-footed animals and creeping things, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator. Notice he says they worship the creature. So this is a false worship that people eventually come to. They've rejected God, but they begin to worship something like the lower forms of life, the animals, the insects, the four-footed creatures. There's a form of idolatry that people begin to worship instead of God. They still worship, but they worship something else in its place. Once people left God, Jehovah, in the Old Testament, they began worshiping Baal or one of the other gods of that society. And in Egypt, they worshiped the river Nile, they worshiped the crocodiles, they worshiped all sorts of things, just like it is saying here, that were not the creature, but not the Creator, but the creature. They began to worship the creature in its place. So he goes on then to next say there's a third stage that happens in these societies. He says, therefore God gave them up to uncleanness and the lusts of their hearts to dishonor their bodies among themselves. For this reason God gave them up to vile passions. Well, it goes on then in the next couple of verses down from this, in verse 26 and 27, he says, for even their women exchanged the natural use for what is against nature. Likewise, also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust for one another, men with men committing what is shameful and receiving in themselves the penalty of their error which was due. Now, there's a predictable pattern, is what he's saying, that you can see this coming. When men reject God, then they put some other wisdom in its place. It might be secular humanism, it might be naturalistic evolution, some way to explain the universe instead of God. But then that leaves the door open to a debasing type of lifestyle. And there is no moral standards. As God, from the beginning, what did He do? He said that He put Adam to sleep and He took the rib and He formed the woman out of the side of man and gave her to him. And He said, for this reason a man shall leave his wife, his father and mother, and be joined to his wife, and they will become one flesh. So God created the proper society there. But when men reject that, what's going to happen? Well, it's predictable that it is going to be debased lusts and other types of relationships to take the place of what God intended. I think we can see that it is a progress, because a few years ago in our society, the buzzword that we were hearing about was the LG community. Lesbian, gay. And that was a big thing. And then the next thing we know, it was LGB. Right? Bisexual. Now it's LGBT, transgender. What's the next one? Q. Question mark. All right. So that is happening in our culture, I believe. The very thing that Paul is warning about that will happen. And the fourth stage that he then talks about is the indulgence, the impenitence of mind, where he says in verse 28, he says there that even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness. So there's a whole long list of things that can come from this. But as we think of what he is saying here, that it's a step-by-step progression, that we start out, society start out with intelligence of knowing of God from the creation. But if they choose ignorance of God and not glorify Him, then it will lead to idolatry, and it will lead to an arrogant attitude of trying to replace God. It will lead to immoral practices and immoral relationships. But there is a point in there where God says, I've had enough, that gives them up to a debased mind to follow those things. We're at a time in our nation's history that is calling for us, each one, to be strong and to rise to meet that challenge. And what is the good news? What is the good news? Because when we look at this passage, it's very dark. The picture is very dark here that is being painted by Paul. Have we gotten to that point? Is there any good news? What is the good news? Well, there is good news. And there's always good news for us, because he does not omit to mention in this passage that they exchanged the truth of God for the lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than who? The Creator, who is blessed forever. God hasn't gone anywhere. He's still there. He's still all-powerful. But if men choose to go away from Him, God will eventually say, well, okay, that is your choice. But it doesn't change the fact that God is the Creator and that He is to be blessed forever. And He is the one that we should be worshiping and the one who will bless us if we acknowledge Him. Just as He said, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. It is the power of God to salvation for everyone who believes. So there is the good news. The good news is that Jesus Christ is our Savior. He died for our sins. He rose from the dead. He's sitting in heaven at the right hand of God. He's coming again. And so there is every reason for us to not be despondent or as Christians to give up hope. Our faith should never waver in any of those things that are happening in the world around about us. But there is a reality. There is a reality that he points out. And that is why the need for Jesus Christ is so great. That we live in a world that needs Jesus Christ more than ever, perhaps. But as I think about this, I'm reminded of this man, Buddy Kyle, who some of you know and remember. He died about 12 years ago, around 2004, 2005. And there was never a better friend of this congregation than Buddy Kyle. He was a very humble man. He was a very soft-spoken man. But he was devoted to helping the church. And from the time that I met Buddy, if there was ever anything here at the building that needed fixing, I knew who to call. Because I think that man could fix anything. And he was willing to give his time to do that. He provided so many invaluable hours. I mean, we cannot even begin to think of the cost of what it would be to have paid him for his time of service to this congregation. And man like that reminds me of the predicament that we are in our society, because we think, what can help our nation? There's only one person you can call, that's God. It's going to take God to fix the problems of our world that we have right now. It's not just about this coming election. This coming election is an important election. I fully believe that. Maybe very crucial to the future. But honestly, the problems that we have in a nation goes much more deeper than this election. We're involved in a spiritual battle. We're involved in a battle that no matter who wins this election, no matter what happens on Tuesday, we're still in a battle for the survival of this nation. And I'm reminded of what happened, the events of World War II, with the rise of the Nazis and the Third Reich in Germany. Because in May of 1940, they initiated what became known as the German Blitzkrieg. And in a matter of days, they just made an all-out attack in various directions to Holland and Belgium and Luxembourg and France. Just all out invasion and bombing and raids. And within a matter of days, Holland, Belgium, Luxembourg and France, even Paris, fell to the Germans. And on May the 18th of 1940, the Germans marched into Paris with their tanks and declared that they were in control of France. And in England, they were watching all of this happen, and thankfully there was a man there, Winston Churchill, in England. Because if it had not been for him, England might not have survived that. But that massive invasion that they began there, it was no doubt England was next in line. It was just a matter of time before they made the attacks upon England, which they began bombing raids very shortly after that. But Winston Churchill went before the British people. He went before Parliament, and he made two historic speeches. The first one he made before Parliament was known as "We Will Fight Them on the Beaches." And then 2 weeks later, on May the 20th, he got on the radio, the BBC, that night, and he spoke to the people. And his words were recorded. He said, "I expect the Battle of Britain is about to begin, and upon this battle depends the survival of Christian civilization. Upon it depends our own British life, the long continuity of our institutions and our empire, and the whole fury and might of the enemy must very soon be turned on us. Hitler knows that he will have to break us in this island or lose the war. If we can stand up to him, all Europe may be free and the life of the world may move forward into broad, sunlit uplands. But if we fail, then the whole world, including the United States, including all that we have known and cared for, will sink into the abyss of a new dark age, made more sinister and more, perhaps more protracted by the lights of perverted science. Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duties and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour." Well, that speech, you know, really galvanized the British people and encouraged them to stand and fight the tyranny that was threatening their civilization. And I think the question for us today is, what will Christians in America do in the coming days? And will history say this was our finest hour? He was a great leader. Maybe not necessarily a Christian, but I believe that God used him in that time, and that God can use men like that for his purposes. Men of courage, men of strength, God can use them. I believe that we are in a crucible at this time. A crucible is an iron pot that holds molten gold and lead. And gold melts at 1900 degrees Fahrenheit. And it is put in the fire, and one of two things happens. Either it brings out something that is better or something that is worse. What we're dealing with in our society today is a spiritual battle. We need to get back to the moral foundations of our nation. And some say we have already tipped the edge. We have already gone over the cliff. It's point of no return. I don't believe that. I believe that there are many Christians, churches throughout this nation that are made of godly people who will rise. I believe, my confidence is that the American people, the Christian in this nation, will respond like the people of Britain, that this will be our finest hour. There was in the 1600s a man by the name of Samuel Rutherford. He was a Scottish preacher, but he was very interested in the political happenings, and he wrote a famous book called Lex Rex in the year 1644. And the word Lex Rex, it means the law is king. The law is king. Not Rex Lex. The king is law. That's what his point. Who is the law? Is the king the law, or is the law the king? You know, because when we have leaders who think that they are above the law, we can no longer have a free society. Rutherford's point was, no, the king is under the law. He is not exempt from the law. No matter who he thinks he is, the law is king. And if the king violates the law, the king has to answer to the law. So that made a profound impact upon the founders of our nation, who wrote the Declaration of Independence and sought to preserve freedom in our society, that the law is king. No one is above the law. Peter says that the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. We're in that crucible, and we're being tested as a nation and as a people. Our faith is being put to the test. What will happen? Forget about what happens Tuesday on the election. It goes beyond that. It goes beyond what's going to happen to the future of our nation, regardless of who is elected on Tuesday. We're in a battle, and we're being tested. But those who have genuine faith will emerge from that with something much better will come from it. It will bring about a better condition, a better world, if we meet that test. We're going to stand and sing the invitation song that's been chosen. And if there are those today who are subject to the invitation of Jesus, keep in mind that even though we live in a world of order, that we can look at the mountains and we can look at the streams and the rivers and we say, what a wonderful God we have to create this. That is not the basis of our salvation. Our basis of salvation is through Jesus Christ, who died for us. And He says, come to Me, and I will give you peace of mind. I will give you salvation. We're going to stand and sing the invitation song today. If there are those who are subject, we'd invite you to come forward. Jesus invites you to come and to be baptized into Jesus. And He says you can be raised to walk in newness of life. And so we invite you to come, and we stand together and sing the invitation song. I have